right, here we go. 9:06 on a Friday. Let's get Tom in here because we got a great big bucket full of news and it's splashing all over the place. Tommy, get in here. I'm just saying we got a great big bucket full of news and it's splashing and splishing and splashing all over the place.
I got a new strategy I'm going to try
today. What is that? Let's do a strategy on a Friday.
I'm going to shout you down for a change. Cut you off at the heels.
Do we have that sound effect that they were using at the city council little town hall? We will be bringing that into the show today. A little Shama Swanka, a little taste of her own medicine.
Curly's got about a taste of his own,
oh,
too.
Oh, sweet justice for Shama Swanka. Oh, love it. She goes down to Bezos' balls and stands there with her microphone. And was she expecting the sort of the response that she got from her brothers? She refers to him as her brothers.
I assume not. It seemed relatively well-coordinated on the part of her brothers.
Yes, I guess her brother. Well, is there anything wrong with that? These activists.
No.
And can labor union guys not be activists as well?
Turnabout is fair play, it seems to me.
Yeah, so she goes down there to talk about how they want to tax Amazon because Amazon's a horrible organization and they're just terrible people there at Amazon, and Bezos is anyway. So Siobhan tried valiantly during her press conference outside of the Amazon spheres and was shouted down by construction workers who gathered to protest, as Tom said, organized labor, organized protest. Here we go.
No head tax! No head tax! No head tax!
Can I make an appeal to my brothers in the labor movement? As you know, I'm also a rank and file member
no
of the labor movement.
No head tax! No head tax! No head tax! No head tax!
There you go. Yeah. Don't forget, she's also a member. There was Shama Sawant when Boeing was talking about the 777 said, the only response we have is to have Boeing executives who do not agree with keeping the plane here for its further machinists is to say to the machinists that are here, and workers are here, they do the jobs. The executives don't do the jobs. The executives don't work. The machinists do all the work. We can retool the machines to produce mass transit buses instead of destruction, you know, like war machines.
Why do you keep going back to this?
Because I love it, because this puts in context of who she is. This is wonderful. This is an economist who believes that the workers, they're just winning a contest. I only finished them. Okay. The workers should take over the factories of Boeing, and then rather than making planes, make buses. This is, I'm just putting in context, who Shama Sawant is, to put it in perspective of this is where she comes from and these are some of her ideas. She is obviously a strong union supporter. She wants the union workers to take over the factories of Boeing and build buses rather than planes.
So breaking news, she's a socialist.
I know. I got it.
So why don't we, in terms of how this thing was addressed yesterday, I thought it was in terms of disruptive politics, she got a taste of her own medicine.
Right. Here's some of the guys giving her something.
One side is right or wrong, but in terms of tactics, it was the same.
Well, do you think she was surprised that union people would be in favor of union jobs created by the richest man in the world?
I think that there are different, as she says, that we can disagree within, we can fight each other, and when we do in the labor movement, the bosses win. So she sees it as a labor issue that we need to reunite rather than sort of divide, or that will allow the bosses, as she puts it, to win.
I see.
So she's, now what she does is, I mean, she ended up getting shut down, and then she allowed one guy to give this very, you know, well-delivered speech, and then she delivered hers. So it ended up not being just a, you know, a contretemps. It was actually something
English, Tom.
Worth
English. Sawant did invite the workers to speak, but they wanted to take their turn politely and no shouting. Construction workers weren't having it.
Democratic. I've seen your party shout people down before.
That's not
this
true.
Is a taste of what you do.
It's not true. We allow everyone to speak.
Don't want to speak.
I am
don't
speaking.
Want to tell all these
you're
people?
Not speaking. You're interrupting.
No, that guy, yeah. You're not speaking, you're interrupting. So eventually the spokesman did get a chance to get up there, and here we go.
Amazon is a responsible developer that pays living wage wages and provides living wage jobs for the construction industry. They don't have a requirement to pay prevailing wage, but they do. They provide health insurance and retirement for ironworkers on that project. All of these projects. They have provided more than 1 million man hours in the last year alone.
Yeah. So I think these guys are like, hold on a second. Amazon comes out with a statement on Wednesday that Thursday, we're going to hold back on the idea of continuing construction. We might not be hiring and putting in place those 8,000 workers. We might just stop. I think they're going to stop it, right?
Yeah.
So now the workers.
Put it on hold. Yes.
Put it on hold.
Absolutely.
So do the workers get paid when it's put on hold? I guess they don't. So maybe they're starting
for
to
that
think,
project.
For that project,
no.
Right?
I don't know that there's any end of construction anytime soon in Seattle, but no, it's right, and so it makes perfect sense for labor unions. And in fact, I mean, we knew this. The labor unions were protesting the head tax as well as Amazon because they think it's going to it shuts down their chance to work.
Yeah.
So it's a classic clash,
right?
And we got a good evidence of it yesterday. What was different about yesterday's was that you had this very well coordinated attack using the tactics of Shama Sawan on herself.
Yes, good job. Shawan said that it's important for the city not to cave to Amazon's extortion. How's it extortion? But they're pitting the workers against the workers, and Amazon knows it'll spread if Seattle passes. Here we go.
They know that this tax could very easily become the new $15 an hour. That if Seattle's working people had the courage to follow through and pass a tax on the biggest businesses so that we can fund affordable housing, that will be hugely encouraging to working people in every other city that is reeling with an affordable housing shortage. And they will say, just like they passed 15 after we passed 15, they will say, we will also pass a tax on big business.
Okay, yeah, I guess so it's going to sweep across the country.
Well, I mean, it is. I mean, that's a concern for every piece of legislation. It usually doesn't start in Seattle. It starts in California, and there's always concern, and so they pour big money into California usually is the battleground for it. And we're seeing something similar elsewhere. Minimum wage does have more popularity than I think a lot of companies would appreciate. But here we have this classic case of, you know, fighting these two goods, if you see it as a labor unions and Shama Sawant's efforts at trying to raise money to help homeless. And the question is, what's the best way to do it? Now you've got the mayor, Jenny Durkin, saying, hey, listen, she has not been in favor of this head tax. She wants to work with the business community. We had this happen during our show yesterday. She came out with this homeless business with Dow Constantine. But the idea here is she is trying to establish that, listen, Amazon is more good for our economy than not, and the homeless deserve our attention. We need to figure out a working together.
She's trying to find a middle ground.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, Shama Sawant, I guess she realizes, because she is an economist, I think, that capital is mobile. And just like Boeing said, hey, you know what? We're going to build a plant in South Carolina. So they move their capital somewhere else. So Amazon says, you know what, we're going to go somewhere else. So the 8,000 jobs and the construction workers would just simply go away. So the richest man in the world, Jeff Bezos, richest man in the world, makes the decision, I'm assuming, or somebody next to him makes the decision, you know, we don't want to pay those taxes. So let's stop everything. We'll use that as a bargaining chip. Because they're a very, very aggressive company. So the same way they undercut the brick-and-mortar stores, they do what they can in order to make sure that they're continuously giving the best service to the lowest price to customers.
That's right.
And so the richest man in the world stops the spending, and then the poor guy standing there in the hard hat is actually affected by it. That's called trickle-down economics. So here we are with these people saying, hey, hold on, city council. Don't tax our jobs away, because then the jobs will go away and I won't be working. And that's the argument that was occurring there in front of Bezos' glass spheres yesterday, Tom.
I think you're confusing the trickle-down economy or effect with the multiplier effect, but still, it is true.
I might just say this, because you always poop all over my trickle-down.
Well, trickle-down doesn't work as a philosophy.
A $250,000 guy working at Amazon walks outside at 12 o'clock and buys a taco from a taco guy who's got a taco truck right there.
Yeah.
Would the taco truck guy be selling that taco to that employee 7 years ago in that part of Seattle? No.
No, but the taco guy doesn't make that much money. That's the problem. The guys who have the most money.
Okay,
so, anyway, let's not get into this. We got into this yesterday.
This is important for anybody that actually agrees with you on how trickle-down works. Understand, the guy that makes a $250 takes part of that money and buys a taco. Now, whether the guy that makes the taco makes as much money as the guy, or he doesn't make as much as the programmer, well, guess what? Maybe you should have gone to programming school, or maybe he's happy selling tacos. But
maybe
the reason the taco guy's got the money, Tom, is because Jeff Bezos hired the one guy in order to get paid $250,000. That's called trickle-down economics.
Okay, but the trickle-down economics doesn't trickle down far enough to usually the guy who's making the tacos. What happens is that the Donald Trumps of the world
getting
money from... Get a better parentage.
What do you want to pay? No, what do you want to pay somebody to make a taco? $50 an hour? Come on.
Anyway, moving on.
Okay.
All right, we can't argue if you don't actually see how the multiplier effect works as well. But here's the great thing.
I understand the multiplier effect, and I agree with them. That's the concern that we have. The problem is, do you allow somebody – this is the first time Amazon has been a great partner. Hitherto, they had not really challenged anything that was happening. They've been working on their own, and they've been positive for Seattle. This is the first time that they've played a Boeing card, which in effect, you know, the state now, I think a lot of people think we regret – looking back on it, that we gave Boeing unbelievable tax benefits, and then they didn't stay here, you know. Anyway, that's the idea. Extortion is an inflammatory word, but that's the argument that's being made. How far do we bend over to accommodate the businesses here?
How are you bending over? You're not bending over.
No, by giving them all the tax benefits. What happened in the legislature, and I think Governor Inslee was the governor then too, we did everything we could and saved them from hundreds of millions of dollars of taxes to encourage them to stay here and not uproot themselves entirely. They did that, but they didn't get any of the benefits, and they realized that the problem with that legislation is we did not hold them to.
Right.
We just thought, oh, if we're nice to them, they'll be nice back to us, and instead more business.
Not well
South
written.
Carolina.
There was a little loophole in
That's
there
right.
that Boeing was able to use.
I know.
And it's like, there you go. This is not the fact
bosses.
That the city is bending over to Amazon.
Well, I mean, that's...
Amazon, the city yes. is asking Amazon to bend over and write a check for $20 or $30 million
okay,
to continue
yes.
to pour more money into a failed okay. homeless program.
First off, it's not... Yeah, well, the failure... We've always had to make this distinction. The failure business is secondary. I think that they would object to the head tax even if it was a successful homeless program. I don't know. Maybe you don't think that. If we could establish that this X amount of money actually has the positive effect on homelessness, I still think that... Amazon, and it's not, we keep calling it Amazon, but it's not just Amazon. It's 500 different companies, the top 3% businesses. But the idea is that if you think the money is going to waste, that's a whole other issue.
Right.
The issue here is it fair to tax a company which, in the eyes of the supporters of the head tax, say, have helped create some of the problems that we're using the money to right. Try to dissipate?
Sure. You got to make them be the bad guy and make them submit. They have to pay the toll.
They're not, well, they're not bad guys. You make it sound like she's sees them as villains. No, she says that the tax break that they just got that was passed through Congress could fund what we are asking them in the head tax for the next 40 years. That's the case. It's not dooming their business. It's allowing their business to prosper, yeah. just not quite as much.
And don't forget, all taxes are paid for by either customers, employees, or shareholders. Anyone want to argue that? That's
no.
where the money comes from.
I know.
The employees,
fine.
The shareholders,
the shareholders,
or the customers.
The shareholders
so everybody,
put their money in
so
to make
Jeff
money.
Bezos doesn't write the check. She seems to believe Jeff Bezos. He could easily write the check. Really? Jeff Bezos is going to write a $20 million check or a $30 million check?
I mean, he's specifically good. I don't think that's what's intended.
Would he do that?
What do you mean, would
Absolutely
he do
that?
Absolutely
not. It's the law. So here we go with Amazon still has everything on hold. The vote was supposed to take place on May 14th. Mike Lewis, a fine reporter here at Cairo Radio, has told us that he believes he's going to put his paycheck up, Tom, as a wager that the vote will not be taking place on May 14th. Has anybody taken Mike Lewis up on
well,
that
no,
bet?
He's already won the bet because it's now been delayed till 21st. Unfortunately, no one was sucker enough to think that he didn't know what he was talking about.
He had the inside skinny on that. That's what happened there.
Insider, trader information, inside trader.
All right, let's see. Which one do you want to take care of? Andrew, what do you want to do next? Will you have better sound? Unless you're calling Audible live on the air.
Oh, I think we should definitely go with the gold bar story.
Gold bar That's activist. Fun. This gal is a very, very aggressive attorney who's constantly asking for freedom of information. She's asking for the city of Gold Bar to release a whole bunch of communications back and forth. And she is constantly asking for this stuff. She's an activist, Tom. And legally, she's allowed to. You're allowed to ask the city to show you emails and show you correspondence between city council members. This is all public government, public action. It can be given to a citizen, right?
True.
So Annie Block has got a little bit of a problem. Annie Block herself posted a message on a website that the Gold Bar reporter talking about how persecuted she has been. Here we go.
I've been suing local government agencies for racketeering, threatening my life, using the police departments to trump up criminal charges on me, and et cetera, including the court systems. Last night, I got an email from an attorney basically threatening me that if I don't stop, they're going to get me confined to a mental institution. They even bragged that they've done this before.
Really? We're going to put you in a mental institution?
So what she is talking about, my hunch is that they didn't use the legalese wasn't mental institution, but that's her interpretation of it. The reason she's so upset is because we've got a lower court decision now affirmed by a federal appeals court decision that's charging her $78,000 in attorney fees for what they say are basically entirely groundless and frivolous cases being brought against these public employees. Their assertions were implausible and incomprehensible and didn't involve violations of federal law like she claimed.
Has she been disbarred?
So now, yes, the state Supreme Court just signed an order disbarring her based on the Bar Association's investigation of whether she had violated rules of professional conduct. So that may be where she's thinking, well, they're claiming I'm crazy.
Uh-huh.
Well, according to the state bar and the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice, she is, in legal terms, not crazy as insane, but not playing cricket with the rules.
To give you a taste of how upset the people of Gold Bar were with Ann Block, here's a voicemail from the citizens left on Block. Here we go. She posted online.
Hi, Ms. Block. I'm a resident of the state of Washington. I just wanted to call to verify your home address so that I can properly serve you and sue the shit out of you. I'm sick of your antics, your tactics, and everything else, young lady. Do you understand that? But as for wasting all of our taxpayer monies, I will launch an absolute entire campaign against you to show everybody in Washington State who you really are. Grow up, knock it off.
Who are her clients?
I think herself.
She runs a website called the Gold Bar Reporter. So she's basically like the local busybody that takes it on herself to dig into local politics. You've probably dealt with this on Sammamish City Council.
Yes.
Folks that take up all the time, all the resources of the entire local government to dig into their own little private deals.
Got it. Okay.
And so what they say now, and I want to support.
She should run for office.
Independent, surely, yes. Or get a talk show.
No, run for office.
And
she has to reimburse the city $78,000
for all of these claims that she's because and you say why where is that money come from? It's what the city has had to defend itself, for with these suits that are considered frivolous.
A little town like Gold Bar doesn't have that many people working there, and every time you file one of these Freedom of Information requests, I mean, it just messes everything up. Right from the sewer people, the permitting people, the dead raccoon on the side of the road. Somebody has to stop all that, start digging into a bunch of stuff, and then send it to you.
No, I mean, we shouldn't discourage citizens for, you can be a gadfly. It's okay. It's not illegal. But the problem is when she's been told, okay, that is a case that you went too far. You cannot be dragging Snohomish County and or Gold Bar into court for that. And she persists. Mm-hmm. That's when all these expenses pile up and now they're throwing them back in her lap.
I remember hearing a case of people would shoot a couple of emails in towards the city and wait a little while and then file a Freedom of Information request saying, please give me all information regarding all correspondence between this date and that date. Mm-hmm. If they don't get those extra emails in there, they said, you didn't give us all of it, and now we're going to sue you.
That sounds like a loophole.
A lot of loopholes. We come back. He has written a book and standing room only. In fact, he's coming to Seattle to speak. And some people find what he's saying about young men needing to toughen up to be just a little too mean. We'll talk about Jordan Peterson and who this man is and why he's causing such a stir. We'll be right back. Here we go on a Friday. A couple things you know happen every single time at this show. 9:34, we're talking about Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. That's Keel Mortgage, all your mortgage needs. Heading out into the marketplace this weekend. Maybe going to do some tire kicking as you look around at a house that may be available. Why not get yourself a pre-approval letter? Get that from Keel Mortgage, Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. 10:34, Tom, an hour from now, the Know-It-All Quiz will be happening. Muckleshoot Bingo. Normally it's at 11:34.
Right.
I got to rush out, so I can't do it. Mike Lewis steps back in, but the Know-It-All Quiz occurring at 10:34. Also, as we said yesterday.
With you.
Right, we get
not rushing out until after.
No, I got to do the quiz.
That's right.
As we said, we might get a more sober crowd at 10:34. Because they do have drinking games. Every time I interrupt you, apparently they take a shot. Okay.
That explains a lot.
By the way, we do have that sound effect standing by. I mean, Andrew is, it's up. We're leaving it up to Andrew Wynn to play.
Okay. We have a
That's the one they were using at the town hall. We like it. We like it. Yeah. We like it. All right. A guy named Jordan Peterson. He is from Canada. He is a professor. He did some studying at Harvard as well. And he now has the number one book, Tom, number one book on Amazon. People are rushing out to in order to order this one and have it come to their house in less than 24 hours. It's called 12 Rules for Life, an antidotal
antidote to chaos.
Right. He is touring the country, actually a world tour, as Mr. Peterson is out there selling his book. He is announced to come to Seattle. I think it's sold out already. Who is this guy, this academic from Canada that's causing such a stir? He's got a bunch of YouTube channels as well. He has a special critique of Marx, Karl Marx, which, by the way, his birthday is coming up pretty soon. I thought you'd be celebrating that one. Here's a little something from Jordan Peterson.
And I would say that it's ethically incumbent on those who are liberal or left-leaning to identify the markers of pathological extremism on the left and to distinguish themselves from the people who hold those pathological viewpoints. And I don't see that that's being done. And I think that's a colossal ethical failure, and it may doom the liberal left project.
I've heard him say this before, and I've seen where he says, with the right, there's a certain group, eventually at some point, you say, okay, we represent this, 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 and this, and all this other nonsense, this Confederate flag stuff, and this, we're going to draw the lines and parallel them. We're not going to include you in our group. You won't be part of who we are.
Yeah, but I guess I don't understand what his argument is, because
he says on the left, you don't have it.
But you do. We had Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Those are two people on the left arguing about should you be more centrist or more a radical. And, you know, Bernie Sanders is not identifying with, I don't know what you would call it, the extreme left. I mean, I think there are these kinds of divisions. I'm not quite sure why he says that. The argument seems to me to go the other way as well. Did Donald Trump distinguish himself significantly enough from, say, the Nazi sympathizers, the alt-right, at the same time? I mean, I think this what he's observing is true on both sides, but still, he's seen as, again, he's somebody you've known for a while. He's relatively new to me. Mm-hmm. They consider him a professor against political correctness. He comes with an academic. He's kind of an ivory tower guy.
Yeah, he is.
But he's justifying, I mean, the reason he's of some note now is that his presentation, especially in this 12 rules of life kind of idea, that it's simplistic enough that other people that share, that have political leanings toward that, anti-political correctness, can sort of feel like they can justify themselves by having this highfalutin professorial demeanor.
He mentions postmodernism a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
I know you like that.
Which I love, and that's what I was working on when I was a grad student.
Right.
Postmodernism.
So it's not fair just to put a little tiny cut on it, but what he basically says is, it's like when William F. Buckley got John Birch Society away from what conservatives were. He says on the left, yeah, you can have Bernie, but then there's people even further to the left of Bernie, but you don't do anything to denounce those people. You don't go even further to say, well, why is it the Democratic Party also includes socialists and also communists? Why are they included? Why don't you draw the line?
See, what's interesting is that Bernie Sanders himself isn't even in the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders is a Democratic socialist who distinguishes itself from the Democrats.
Okay.
And then you've got the Democratic socialists who distinguish themselves from the socialists, and if there are any communists out there still. But I mean, Bernie Sanders is very careful to say that he is a Democratic socialist,
right,
which is a different kind of, it doesn't take over the economic rules engines like true maybe socialism,
yeah,
you know, could argue. And so I think there are distinctions. I'm not quite sure what that is. I don't know what radical.
What radical left beyond party? Let's not talk Democrat or Republican. Let's just talk ideology.
Yes, the liberals.
Does the left actually say to people that want communism, you know what? We're going to have to draw the line on you guys.
Yes, I think so. It's too easy to take a centrist like Hillary Clinton, but let's take somebody who is on the left side of things, like Bernie Sanders. He doesn't call himself a socialist. He calls himself a democratic socialist. He does not align himself with socialists, you know, purer socialists or communists or whatever else you see on the right, you know, anarchists. So I think that, I mean, he is calling for a relatively conventional approach. So I'm not quite sure. Now, the thing is, to be fair to Jordan Peterson, he has an elaborate critique.
Yes.
These are like 180-minute lectures.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're trying to take...
With a commercial, you know, in the beginning.
Is that right? We're trying to take, you know, ideas of his kick them around, and that was just...
You want to hear another one?
But okay.
Yeah, here's another one. Okay. There are three things that Peterson sees as a threat to the coming from the left, driven by legitimate concerns. This is 45 seconds. We've cut this down, too. Here we go.
They're driven fundamentally by a horror of inequality and the catastrophes that inequality produces. And fair enough, because inequality is a massive social force and it does produce, it can produce catastrophic consequences. So to be concerned about that politically is reasonable. But we do know that that concern can go too far. There's a triumvirate of concepts that, what would you say, have the same potentially catastrophic outcomes when implemented as the racial superiority doctrines. Diversity, inclusivity, and equity. Even though you can have an intelligent conversation about two of those anyways. But I would say that of the three, equity is the most unacceptable. The doctrine of equality of outcome.
Yeah, that everybody gets lost the same thing.
Did you notice that? He said anyways.
I know. I was hoping that Andrew would have cut the S off.
But still, go ahead. That was a cheap shot. Go ahead, John.
He went on it. He goes on to do, for the next 118 minutes to explain that you can. Everybody should be able to line up at the starting line at the same time.
Yeah.
Everybody's on the starting line, right?
Yeah.
But you can't then stop some people from getting to the end, to the finish line sooner. Or just say, you know what, we'll just move the finish line up and everybody comes across the finish line.
Yeah.
So the equality of outcome is his concern.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I think that is a danger. I mean, even Kurt Vonnegut, you know, made a joke in one of his books and he was as, you know, a sort of a, as revolutionary for a writer as they came in the 60s and 70s that, yeah, you don't want to have weights on people so they can't progress just so everyone's equal. He's had that kind of a fantasy, and it is a concern. And I guess I think the liberals would be more concerned about getting everybody at the starting line. That's their biggest push. That's what Lyndon Baines Johnson actually said about the civil rights movement is, yeah, you can't have a fair race if you know.
You've been in shackles for 400
yeah,
years. Yeah.
And it's like starts, you know, 100 yards behind you.
Yeah.
And I think the Republicans or the more conservatives are more concerned about, well, we're less concerned about the starting line, but we're more concerned about the finishing lane. And if you make everybody finish at the same time, then that kills individuality, it kills the entrepreneurial spirit and all that. So I think that, see, that's what I like about an academic like this guy. He raises interesting issues that then can be discussed in a rational manner.
He's smart and he lays it out in a smart way, as opposed to some people on the left and right that just sort of say stuff like Sean Hannity.
Yes, that's right.
I'm sorry. I had somebody telling you that. You ever listen to that guy? He's brilliant. I'm like, brilliant?
See, that's where Jordan Peterson needs to draw a line about who's with us and
who's
against us.
He might be cutting him out. We'll come back and talk about why, when you pre-order food and then wait in line, apparently it's because people don't want to feel like an ass.
That's so not you.
No, I don't do pre-order, but you're right. Oh. I don't mind feeling like an ass.
Right back.
We go on a Friday. Opening day boating season tomorrow, Tom.
Son of a gun.
Can you believe
it? Sneaks up on me. At least this year it did.
Yesterday.
You going to be out there?
I took Charlie and her friend to see Khalif yesterday at WAMU.
Oh.
And all the boats are all, they're already in line. And yesterday afternoon, they're all getting lined up out there in Lake Washington. Opening day boating. And I think the weather might be good. Which would be terrific. I'm going to be out there. I got invited out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course
I'm a boater.
Did. Yeah. You. That's all you know. In fact, you don't even know people that don't have boats. Do you have a boat? Nope. Sorry. Don't have time for you.
You know, I bought one. I bought like a little laser. It's a little racing sailboat.
Uh-huh.
And I parked it in the yard. And as my friend Dave the cop said, as we picked it off the back of the pickup truck and put it in the side of the house, he said, "And that's where it'll be until you sell it on Craigslist for $50.
Yeah.
And guess what? I have never taken it out.
Yeah,
it's sitting there. It's full of water and moss and leaf droppings.
And yet you still talk, or at least you did up until recently, of buying another boat.
Well,
and
living
on a boat.
But like the boat at the side of the house, okay, a little
sailboat.
That's
something different.
Yeah, something different. All right. A fun article in the Wall Street Journal regarding the fact that now you put an app on your phone, and 155 million people have downloading apps on phones to allow them to order food and drinks and not have to wait in line. But the weird thing is, we are so brainwashed and so conditioned.
No,
yes.
We're so human.
So
this is a good thing.
Go to Italy. You ever seen him in Italy?
Okay. Send me to Italy.
Let's go. We'll go to Italy. Been to Italy? You watch him order and there's no lines.
Yeah.
There's no lines in Italy. There's no lines in China. It's pandemonium. Everybody's screaming out what they want. Don't say cappuccino, por favor.
So is that better?
No, but I'm just telling you.
So anyway, what are we talking about?
Well, the
here,
fact
John?
Is that people will download the app, and they rather than just going to the front of the line and getting the sandwich that they've ordered ahead of time, they stand dutifully in line waiting, even though they've taken the additional step of pre-ordering.
That's right. Pre-ordering, because of apps, makes it so much easier for people to get their food quicker. You don't have to wait in line. Wall Street Journal focuses on this. Now, this isn't most people that pre-order, but a lot of people, they call them a stubborn minority, end up getting in line anyway when they go to Starbucks or Subway because they don't. They feel uncomfortable. This is where I thought the nice contrast with this with you. They don't like lording over the everybody else in line that, oh, I've pre-ordered. I'm going to walk right by you people to get my sandwich or to pick up my Frappuccino, whatever. They say, why is this? What is this odd, compulsion people have to stay in line when they clearly have done everything they can so they don't have to stay in line? It turns out that I think it's a very human thing. First off, they don't like getting what they say the stink eye.
Yeah.
They don't like people thinking, hey, who are you? Who do you think you are?
No cuts.
Yeah, no cuts.
No cuts. I'll give you frontsies if you give me backsies.
But the other thing is they kind of like the social interaction you have in line with people. They feel like it's kind of a positive. And so that's actually a social good.
The line talkers.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And then the third reason why people give for staying in line is they like it as a break. They feel like by standing in line, they're not expected to do anything. They don't have to do anything. Instead of, it's a break from the rat race of my life. So that lines actually are somehow psychologically therapeutic because they can sort of like switch off and realize, I can't do anything. I mean, now for like the 3 or 4 minutes, I'm not constantly rushing to this or that.
Yeah.
I think it's a fascinating article because it seems counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the more you hear about it, the more I'm pleased by the fact that there are enough counterintuitive individuals, it makes us feel more human or seem more human.
So is the primary driver, is it the stink eye? Is it the judgment from others that stops? That seems to be the main thing.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they mentioned that first.
Yeah.
Of those are the three categories. So, yeah, you, and here's why I bring up you. I think you love to flaunt the fact that you're first class or you have preferred whatever at TSA.
I'm not flaunting it.
Exhibit it.
There's a thing called
delight.
Clear.
Okay.
There's a thing called Clear, and you pay like $300 a year or whatever it is. And you put your fingers on the little pad, and it takes a picture of your eyes. And then a very nice person takes your boarding pass and walks you past everybody and walks you right up to the TSA guy. And the TSA guy doesn't even check any of your stuff. This person in this vest with the Clear written on her lapel just gives you the wave, and you go right ahead of everybody.
Okay.
The only rule I have is make no eye contact with anyone.
Oh, you are. So you are intimidated by
I'm not intimidated. I just don't need to make eye contact.
Oh, well, that's good. You're a better person than I was giving you credit for.
No, I pay somebody to make eye contact for me.
That guy's a rich guy. Notice him.
Spin around and look back at that guy in the sweater.